This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
We all have our breaking points. So do natural systems, from the sea currents that warm the UK and North Europe to the Amazon rainforest. Things may head into a decline with no recovery, and maybe faster than expected. Media call them tipping points, scientists now call them tipping elements. The first Global Tipping Points report was launched December 2023 for COP28 in Dubai. The second report just came out ahead of the COP30 in Brazil. And this is a big study, and it has worrying news about disastrous changes, possibly, on a planetary scale. And there are ways to reduce the risk. Here to explain is Dr. Stephen R. Smith, research fellow at the Global Systems Institute, University of Exeter, and he's also with University of Surrey. He specializes in green future solutions. From the UK, Stephen Smith, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
From the public to politicians, why do you think there is so much interest in tipping points?
Well, there's a lot of interest, Alex, in tipping points because, well, both the good and the bad ones, because these are the major risks of escalating change, either damaging change or positive change. So normally when we think of change, change happens slowly, and as the old saying goes, until it happens all at once. And so tipping points are when change starts happening all at once, and therefore it's extremely worrying when the risk of that major changes could happen very abruptly and irreversibly. But also there are great opportunities for accelerating solutions as well. So the interest is in the self-propelling sort of accelerating change.
And the big one in Europe is really about the Gulf Stream, technically called the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC. What is at stake for Europe and Scandinavia if this big current loses power?
Yes, as you say, the Gulf Stream is a part of the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation. It's sort of like the central heating system for Northern Europe. Because here in the UK, for example, we are on the sort of similar latitude to Halifax, Nova Scotia. And so it's quite far north. But thanks to the AMOC, we are actually living in quite a nice sort of temperate, warm area. And that's because the AMOC brings up about 60 times the amount of heat that the whole of humanity produces every year. It's an enormous amount of energy. An enormous amount of warmth that is brought up using that convection current from the tropics up towards the poles. So it's a lifeline for Northern Europe, and when occasionally a part of the AMOC shuts down, which happened in the Middle Ages, we call it the Little Ice Age, then there can be an fairly abrupt change that happens over a couple of decades, and when that system of shuts down or slows down, it could make a serious difference to the average temperature of Northwest Europe, but also will affect for example, the eastern seaboard of the United States, because it will also cause sea levels to rise.
Do we have ideas about how fast the AMOC current could collapse? Are we talking about 50 years where winters get colder a bit every year in Northern Europe, or could it be faster than that even?
According to evidence from history, it could happen within a couple of decades. So that's pretty abrupt in terms of, and the actual difference in temperature if there's a full AMOC shutdown, which I have to say is considered still unlikely within this century, but unlikely means, in scientific terms, means, you know, it could be as little as sort of a 10% chance this century, but you certainly wouldn't get on a plane if there was a 10% chance of it, sort of crashing. So even unlikely things are things that we would do an awful lot to try to avoid. And the difference in temperatures might be as much as sort of 10 degrees Celsius. If it did fully shut down over the course of a couple of decades, it would be a major problem because, of course, infrastructure is not equipped to cope with that kind of a temperature difference. There could be a major disruption, obviously, to agriculture, to the ability to grow food. There are certain modelling that has been done that says that there could be as much as 3 months of ice in London, and ice sheets as far down as halfway down the North Sea. So it would be a huge major change to the climate of Northern Europe. But it would also affect, the AMOC is in the Atlantic Ocean, but it could also affect the monsoons in Africa and India as well. It's a kind of a, the AMOC is one of those things that connects to many other systems, including even the Amazon rainforest and the both the Arctic and the Antarctic poles and ice sheets. So,
yes, the report talks about cascading tipping points. What kinds of feedback loops are scientists most worried about?
Well, of course, we're most concerned with the kind of first-order effects of tipping points, but what cascading tipping points mean is that one tipping point can lead to another and to another, and not only within the Earth system, but the cascading impacts follow on just from those first-order impacts to affecting human systems, society, social cohesion, political stability, food, famine, financial impacts, you know. So it cascades across all sectors of human society, as well as just affecting the immediate sort of physical infrastructures and assets.
Well, we're going to get to ways that might actually help us when it comes to human affairs. But first, I'd like to cover a little bit more about nature. Scientists have identified another 15 tipping elements so far. And one of those lines of irreversibility may have already been crossed for warm water coral. Why is one species included with other big system changes like ocean currents? And what does the report say about coral tipping?
Since our last report in 2023, we have, in those 2 years, we've witnessed over a year now of temperatures greater than 1.5 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial average. And the long-term average is already around 1.4 degrees Celsius. So overshooting the agreed 1.5 degrees limit that was set years ago at the Paris Agreement now looks fairly inevitable, and it could happen as early as 2030. What this means is that it puts us into sort of a new danger zone of escalating risk. It's not inevitable that tipping points will happen once we go above a 1.5 degrees Celsius. It just increases the risk for every increment above that point. I'm sure we've all noticed the unprecedented extreme weather events, from storms and floods and heat waves and wildfires and droughts and so on, including the Amazon rainforest's worst ever drought last year. What we're recording, all of these changes, all of these extreme weather events and unprecedented changes, the canary in the coal mine, or the most sensitive ecosystem of them all, really, is the coral reefs. So marine heat waves are obviously periods of unusual warmth in the oceans. They have hit 80% of the world's warm water coral reefs, including the worst coral bleaching event on record, which is still ongoing. And the response of the coral reefs confirms that we can no longer think about tipping points as a future risk, because widespread dieback of warm water coral reefs is really currently underway, and it will be impacting many people who depend on reefs for fishing and tourism and coastal protection in the years to come. So the report that we've just launched provides a very detailed case study on the coral reef tipping point, which is the first of a series of tipping points that we risk as we head into the overshoot of 1.5 degrees Celsius. It doesn't mean that we should give up on the idea of having any coral reefs. It's just a process that's now beginning to be underway. Once the temperature overheat has exceeded the thermal tipping point of corals, and unless we stop and decarbonize our atmosphere as quickly as possible by stopping emissions and work as quickly as we can to start reducing the global temperature, the greater chance that we have of saving as much of the coral reefs as possible. So there is still hope, and there is still a lot to work for. So we must try our best to decarbonize as quickly as possible.
And ahead of COP30, your new report suggests human society may also have tipping elements that could work in our favor as we try to save the livable climate. Could you give us an example, Steve?
Yeah, certainly. So we normally associate these tipping points with the harmful ones that we've just been talking about in the ice sheets and the AMOC and the Amazon and the corals. But there are also positive, what we call positive tipping points, in both in nature and in human systems. And they work using a similar concept of self-propelling change beyond a threshold. So, for example, since the last report, since 2023, we've witnessed rapid exponential progress in the uptake of clean technologies worldwide, especially in solar power and wind power and electric vehicles. So solar power is growing exponentially, doubling in capacity about every 2 years now. So there is a solar energy revolution underway, and it's already actually in almost every part of the world the cheapest form of electricity generation. That's one of the great positive tipping points that's happening at the moment. And, well, we have the first opportunity now to provide universal, cheap, clean electricity for everybody, especially in places that didn't already have electricity. So we're talking about access to electricity for the whole planet.
And I believe that was Nikola Tesla's dream, was to provide electricity for everyone. Do you see ways to stimulate positive tipping elements in society, or at least to provide fertile ground for large-scale changes that we really need?
Yeah, I mean, this is why the governance, the collective effort that we need is just as important with the positive tipping points to promote them as it is to use governance to prevent the negative tipping points from happening. So just still on the subject of the positive tipping points that we want, we have an opportunity to work together. And some of the most effective ways that we can work together is we have found evidence that using mandates to ban the future sale of fossil fuel cars, for example, or fossil fuel boilers, mandates are generally the most effective policies to trigger these positive tipping points in the energy system or in mobility, in cars and trucks and so on, towards the clean technologies and transition away from fossil fuels. However, in order for that to work, you first got to have the alternative in place. So this is why the sequence of policies is so important, that we need to promote the innovations that we want by investing in them and helping to support the growth of these innovations using investment and by providing the infrastructure. For example, you know, being able to put in the charging stations for the electric vehicles and so on, so that alternative can be, for all of us, the most, not only the most affordable option, but also the most accessible and the most convenient.
And while this report has a chapter on positive social tipping points, you do not discount negative social tipping points either. Is that when things go rapidly wrong? What is a negative social tipping element, Steve?
Yeah, so as you say, Alex, tipping points can be both positive and negative, and they can happen both in the natural and the human sort of social world. So negative social tipping points would be where you have a breakdown in society, for example, when a country becomes highly politically polarized and can collapse into civil war, for example, or there is a breakdown in social cohesion and social trust, or indeed in the economic sphere, there is a risk of a shock to the economic system. And that's a risk not only associated with the risk of these earth system tipping points breaking down, where you have a potential shock to the economic and financial system, but also if you try to change too fast, there is always a risk of instability. And, for example, with stranded assets, if we are not careful, we could get to a situation where by making these fossil fuel assets worthless, they can become stranded assets and it could destabilize the whole financial system. So it's really important to manage the transition very carefully and with due consideration to these tipping points setting off what we call unintended consequences.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Global Tipping Points 2025. Alex talks with Exeter scientist Stephen Smith.
The new Tipping Points report talks about finance to save the climate. Almost every major bank and investment company is financing profitable fossil fuels with trillions of dollars or euros and renewables hardly at all. Is it naive to think financial institutions will act to save species and the climate if it costs them profits?
Yeah, it's a great question. We've seen recently some fairly disappointing news that a lot of the major banks have withdrawn their support for the initiatives that were launched at previous COPs. For example, the Glasgow COP, when they launched the net greening of the financial system. And also recently, there's been a report that every major bank is still financing new coal, oil, and gas fields. So there's a lot to be disappointed and worried about there. But at the same time, I don't think it's naive to think that we could come together to change and to really make a tipping point towards a new way of financing the transition. I think this COP in Belém in Brazil is going to be hugely important for finance because at the last COP, you may remember, there was a new initiative called the Baku to Belém Roadmap, whereby nations of the world agreed to enter into a financial facility worth $1.3 trillion a year, which was a major, by 2035, which was a major advance on the previous sort of financing facility. So I think there's going to be, well, we hope there's going to be some major advances in that direction in this COP. There is certainly a lot of goodwill there, but as you say, at the end of the day, these financial companies, they have a responsibility to their shareholders and so on as well. So it takes a lot of public pressure, for example, then give the legitimacy to our world leaders to take action to curb the behaviors of the financial operators and try to create a more positive financial environment, not only for investing in these new technologies, but also lowering the cost of capital to enable the emerging markets and the emerging countries in Africa and Asia and the majority world to afford the transition themselves.
Yes, the new report has a section on the human rights aspects of tipping points. It says Earth system tipping points are a human rights issue. Now, as we know, the struggle for rights and justice is losing ground in some countries, possibly even in the UK. Is adding human rights an unnecessary distraction to the central problem of extreme climate change?
For me, human rights are inextricably linked to the whole tipping points agenda. Obviously, there are huge implications, especially for the majority world, because it's the most vulnerable nations who are least responsible for this mess we're in as far as the climate and nature crisis goes, who are suffering the most. And at the same time, the interventions that we are undertaking to try to rectify the situation, whether it's solar panels or electric vehicles or heat pumps in our homes and so on, they often require raw materials that are sourced in the majority world, and there are human rights implications in the extraction and production of these new technologies. So we can't separate the very necessary effort that we have to transform our world as rapidly as we can, but in our haste to engineer a sustainable and post-fossil fuel economy, we also have to remember that there are winners and losers. It's incumbent upon us to create the world that we want to see. That includes a fairer world and a juster world, as well as a climate-stable world.
There is a new climate movement now spreading from Brazil. It's called a Global Mutirao. What is that?
Yes, the Global Mutirao is a particularly Portuguese-Brazilian concept, which means, it doesn't just mean collaboration or cooperation, but it means coming together. It's a coming together of people to create something new. And so it is a call to action that for the first time ever, this is the first COP whereby each COP has its own sort of culturally significant concepts that it uses to promote the COP and to help the success of the COP. And this particular COP in Brazil is trying to engage not just the diplomats in their enclosed blue zone, but also the wider civil society in the green zone and beyond throughout the world to create the global mutual, which means it means many different things to many people. And the effort is not to try and define it too tightly that would exclude some people, but to keep it as inclusive and open as possible. And there are dozens of different ways that people are using the concept to create their own, you know, localized and place-based or particular kind of change, whether it's the Global Citizens Assembly, where people come together and participate in helping to co-create the future they want through participatory sort of democratic engagement, or whether it's encouraging various local cooperative energy cooperatives to come together and to accelerate the energy transition in their own local place. There are loads of different examples of how the global mutual is going to be unfolding in this COP, including, I heard today, a wonderful way to try to bring together sports and the arts and all kinds of human endeavor.
Given the upcoming UN Summit on the Future and COP30, what outcomes would signal the world is taking tipping points seriously?
Well, that's a great question. There's a couple of things that are really important here. Tipping points are still not, despite their huge risk, they're still not included in the way that financial organizations, insurance companies, or governments, how they assess risk. So one really, really positive outcome would be if all financial institutions, insurance companies, and government departments could integrate tipping points into their risk assessments so that they can include the risk of tipping points in all of their sort of planning, really. The second thing would be for the nations of the world to really use the Global Tipping Points report to accelerate their level of ambition to halve emissions by 2030. That would be the ideal ambition, and to generally accelerate the decarbonization effort as quickly as possible, because we need to keep fossil fuels in the ground and to transition as rapidly as possible to a post-fossil fuel economy, which is going to be a win-win for everybody, provided that, as I say, that it could be managed carefully so that the people currently employed in the fossil fuel industry can be protected, and to gradually over the course of several decades to be reskilled and found alternative kinds of employment and skills.
From Green Future Solutions and Global Systems Institute, University of Exeter, we've been speaking with Dr. Stephen R. Smith. Find the Global Tipping Points Report 2025 at globaltippingpoints.org. Steve, thank you for spending time with our listeners.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Alex, and look forward to talking to you again.
Good. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. ecoshock.org.